This talk is about mudita, joy. A few years ago, I attended a retreat, a week-long retreat up in northern Colorado, in the United States, with a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. The last official evening Dhamma talk was given by a special guest teacher, a man who was in his late 70s and who was one of the teachers of the Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher who was leading the retreat. Before our guest teacher came in, we were given some background about our special guest. And we were told that he was a very fine artist. And we were also told that he had been in a Chinese prison camp, or a Chinese prison, for about 20 years. And that for 15 of those 20 years, he and another Tibetan Rinpoche were in retreat. So these two lamas were in retreat for 15 of their 20 years of being in prison. And this 15-year retreat came about because of the kindness of one of the Chinese doctors at the prison who created the conditions for these two men to be in retreat. And so our honored guest came into the meditation hall with his somewhat stiff and bent body and was given help up in climbing up into his seat. And he proceeded to give a very long, very clear, and very traditional from the Tibetan perspective Dhamma talk. And he laid out the whole path from the Tibetan perspective, from its beginnings through its ethical moral foundations, and then all the way through, step by step by step, up to the Tibetan Dzogchen teachings. It wasn't a particularly scintillating, I don't know what that word is in Hebrew. If anybody knows, you can say it. Scintillating, do you know, Karen? No. Bright, sparkling. Wasn't a particularly bright, sparkling talk. And there really wasn't any humor in it at all. But it was interesting enough. There was, though, a particularly bright, sparkling aspect of the evening, and that was our guest himself. Because as he spoke, there was a lightness and a kind of suppleness and an incredible delight in his way and how he presented himself or how he seemed that came through. And at times it seemed as though he was almost bouncing up and down in his seat, kind of like the closest thing I'd ever seen to somebody levitating. He would seem like he was going up and down. At the end of his talk, just to check myself and the possibility of my possible projections on this teacher, I asked two friends of mine who were also sitting this retreat if they had a similar experience, and they said they did. They really noticed the same kinds of qualities with this man. After the retreat was finished, there was a fundraising auction where calligraphy and paintings done by this teacher, whose name was Adi Rinpoche, were auctioned off. The woman who had requested Adi Rinpoche to do some paintings and some calligraphy for the auction told us that she had been with him, had stayed with him all the time during his time of painting, all the time he was working on the paintings and the calligraphy. And she reported to us that the whole while that he was painting, he was laughing with delight. Experience the benefits, the fruits of joy. Those remarkably bright attitudes, happy feelings, buoyant happy feelings that flow through us. We experience a kind of physical and energetic sense of transformation and some imbalance within our body, within our mind and within our heart. And we may in these moments feel unbound. We may feel healed in moments of joy. So this evening I'd like to explore mudita with you, the feelings of delight, happiness, joy for, joy with, happiness with, happiness for. These buoyant and powerful energies. The experience of joy and gladness that we feel in relationship to the happiness and the success of others. The delight, the joy that we might feel in our heart in relationship to what others have accomplished. In relationship to the good things that have happened to others. The Buddha spoke about joy when he offered the teachings and the practices of the Brahmaviharas, these immeasurable capacities of the heart, metta, karuna, upekkha, and mudita. Mudita, sympathetic, empathetic, and what I sometimes call contagious joy. Probably most of us have particular ideals that we aspire to in relationship to each of these capacities. And ideals, although of course they're worthy, basically come from the intellect, basically come from thought, from the conceptual mind. Our ideals may certainly be an inspiration for us, but it's important not to be attached to an ideal, not to be attached to how we think it's supposed to be or how we think we're supposed to be. It's essential in our practice to connect to the reality of our experience, to connect to and know the reality of being, meaning simply and clearly being with things just as they are in the immediacy of this moment. Each of these qualities, these capacities of the heart, is really a very natural response to our experiences. A natural response that comes out of the innate purity of our being when we do connect, when we really truly embrace and feel the present moment just as it is. The response of the heart, the response of metta, of compassion, of joy, of equanimity, all coming from an intuitive awareness, the very natural knowing that's rooted in the uncomplicated, unfettered clarity of mindfulness in the present moment. Our capacity to feel joy in relationship to another's happiness, successes, another's beauty, goodness, to feel joy in relationship to someone's delight, or their sense of well-being. And even our capacity to experience joy in the amazing and boundless beauty of this planet that we share with all sentient beings. This is mudita, sympathetic, empathetic, contagious joy. There's a sense of connection, of affinity, a feeling of shared joy, a feeling of harmony, an essential experience of what's sometimes called oneness. And though it's experienced personally, within our own heart, within our body, within our own mind, it's totally impersonal in nature, as I've spoken about with all of these abidings, these divine abidings. It's not mine, it's not yours to get or to own. It's not me, not I. Not the identity that I am a joyful person. Mudita happens. Mudita is. And mudita can be as uncomplicated as simply feeling the light, bright, soft energy of delight that's emitted when we're in the company of someone who's feeling happy, someone who's feeling at ease. It can be that simple. With mudita, when we feel this, when we recognize it and feel it, we quite naturally mirror it back to the other, maybe with words, but I think more often just through the quality of our energy, the energy that we give out, that we emit. And in the process, the delight, the happiness is increased. When we recognize and appreciate a particular positive, the particular positive importance or significance of something in someone else's life, or recognize the particular importance of someone's success, someone's happiness, there's often a very natural inward and outgoing feeling of gladness, of friendliness. This is the response from the heart of mudita. Empathetic understanding, kind-heartedness, friendliness, this very warm human sense of connection. This is mudita. The seeds of mudita, as are the seeds of all the divine abidings, the seeds of mudita were planted in each of us long ago and many times over throughout our lifetime. Every time someone has been happy for us, was delighted for us, delighted with us when we were happy about something, even just the genuine, open-hearted response of a smile or a laugh, when we smiled, when we laughed, the times when we succeeded in some simple way and we were given a smile, maybe given a hug. And as very often happens with babies and with young children, someone maybe clapped for us when we succeeded. And maybe a seed planted sometime during this retreat, even in the silence. The shared joy, the happiness, the silent smiles that are subtly passed around from person to person. For instance, when some particularly delicious food is served. Or the happiness we might feel internally, noticing someone's practice. The warmth of open-heartedness, or the stillness that someone in this retreat is giving out, is emanating. The seeds of mudita planted again and again. And these are the seeds that we cultivate. These are the seeds that we grow through our practice. And again, it's as if we're given a transmission. The transmission of mudita. And we quite naturally, intuitively, pass it on. We practice, we cultivate it, we grow it. And the heart, the mind, is more and more purified. We cultivate it, we grow it, and we pass it on. A kind of seamless circle of transmission. Just take a moment to look at the feeling of joy in a very simple way. To experiment with the feeling of joy in a very simple way. The sense of I am here. So you might close your eyes and go with this experiment. This of I am here. This isn't on the sense of I. The emphasis is not on the sense of am, but on here. I am here. Now, joy moves us into presence. Joy breaks down the pattern of grasping at experience to validate our sense of who we are, to give us a sense of who we are. It moves us into presence, right here, right now. I am here. And we're free to pour our energies into the activity of life itself. Without any need to compare, without any need to compete. Comparing and competing takes an incredible amount of energy to engage in those two activities. Take another moment to reflect or recall, maybe with someone right here or someone in your life outside of retreat, recalling or reflecting a time when you've been able to freely, open-heartedly rejoice, freely, open-heartedly rejoice in, purely rejoice in or with someone's success, someone's happiness. So just taking a moment to reflect, recall this. Seeds of mudita. Sprouting, blossoming. Late 1970s, I had the great privilege of spending some time with a woman named Dora Kuntz. At that time, Dora was in her 80s, 80-some years old, and she was the national president at that time of the Theosophical Society. Dora was Austrian, and she had a very unusual upbringing in Indonesia. She was taught meditation at a very young age. And she told me that her parents didn't mind if she, when she was a child, her parents didn't mind if she missed a meal every now and then, if she was outside playing. But if she missed her meditation period, that wasn't okay with her parents. Fortunately, Dora didn't rebel against this attitude of her parents, And she grew up to be a very rare, very, very rare person, unusual person. And when I met her, she was still very much a practitioner. She was a person of deep wisdom and a teacher of mudita by simply being herself. It's actually one of the things that I remember most about her. Her lightness, her joy. Often when she would be teaching, something she was about to say or maybe something that she had just said or maybe some internal experience that hadn't been or actually wasn't going to be shared would strike her as very funny. And then she would burst out in laughter. And sometimes she would even, she'd slap her leg like that, laughing. She was laughing so hard. And often she'd continue laughing for a while, a few moments. And we, her students, might not necessarily know what she was laughing about. Or what she had just said wasn't particularly funny to any of us. But her delight delighted us. That's what was so delightful. And so we laughed with her many, many times, simply in sympathetic, contagious joy. Dora planted many, many seeds. And it's said that mudita is the most difficult of all of the immeasurables, all of the divine abidings to cultivate. Many years ago, when I first heard this, I was surprised. But as I checked in more closely with my own experience, I found that feeling a pure, untainted joy in others' success, others' happiness, another's beauty, or their well-being can actually be quite difficult at times. There can often be some taste of the comparing mind with critical flavors of maybe judgment, some envy, maybe some sense of competition, maybe some jealousy, a flavor of resentment, making less of that person, debasing them, debasement, or maybe some arrogance. And sometimes even a taste of boredom in relationship to others' happiness, others' success. So it's not so easy. If we slip into and get stuck believing in and identifying with these old conditioned habits of the comparing mind, we perpetuate and we continue to bind ourselves to the very painful delusion of a separate self. And we continue to suffer in the duality of this, what we could call existential loneliness, the most painful delusion that the Buddha called the conceit of self. Mudita can bring to the surface and bring into question much of what has been trained, much of what has been conditioned into us, beliefs that we have about ourselves, beliefs that we hold on to about how it's supposed to be, how I'm supposed to be, and the reactive habit patterns that manifest out of these tightly held beliefs. The practice of cultivating joy for, joy with others can begin to wake us up to seeing that the process of comparing only reinforces the learned belief, for instance, of being deficient. The learned identification of being inadequate in some way or another. it only reinforces the learned feeling of maybe being better, better than, or the best. And so, with that kind of reinforcement in those conditioned habits, we live with a constant underlying, or maybe not so underlying, sense of uncertainty, tension, stress. It's this conceit of self that undermines or usurps or takes out from under the power, takes out from under or usurps the vitality of presence, of being present, really being present with what is. And we set ourselves apart. We separate ourselves with this conceit. And it's actually an endlessly unsatisfying, painful process. It's a major source of suffering in this human realm. Until we're awakened, until we're liberated, as the Buddha said, and I think I said this the other day, and maybe in a group, I don't remember, but the Buddha said, 'tis the self by which we suffer. And this is a quote from Zen Master Dogen. He said, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. To be enlightened by all things is to remove the barriers between self and other. Because of this deeply rooted habit of conceit, which binds us, which keeps us from awakening to the natural response of sympathetic joy, the Buddha instructs us to recognize, acknowledge, and rejoice in ourselves. We can reflect on the ways that we've been of service, the ways that we've cared for others. Reflect on the choices that we've made that have been absolutely appropriate and wise at any given time. We can reflect and rejoice in the times when our heart, our mind has been very clearly present, connected. And when the heart has emanated or given off loving kindness, compassion, or joy in relationship to others. And of course, the possibility of rejoicing in the fact that we've had the great good fortune to connect with the teachings and the practices of the Buddha and are here practicing right now. I think for many people, all too often, our idea of what it means to be really honest with ourselves about ourselves is primarily perceived as admitting all of our weaknesses, admitting our faults, admitting all of the unskillful and bad things we've done. And we could actually call this another form of conceit of self. Identifying and dwelling in this self, bad self, unskillful self, a self with lots of weaknesses and faults, identifying and dwelling in this negative idea of ourself, this negative image of who we are, is actually how guilt, how sorrow, how anguish is nurtured. So I think it's really quite important to take the Buddha's instruction to heart. Rejoicing in ourselves isn't a call for arrogance. It's not a call for self-centeredness. But just the very simple recognition and the acknowledgement of our goodness, our success, our healthy human beingness. In cultivating mudita, it's actually essential to be able to rejoice in ourselves. not in a prideful way, not in a conceited way, but as a means of generating respect, love, confidence, joy, and a sense of well-being that's essential and natural to the awakening mind, essential and natural to the awakening heart. As we proceed with the cultivation of joy, just as with the cultivation of metta, our particular conditioned reactive patterns come into awareness. For instance, the critical pattern of the comparing mind. This might show up. We don't indulge, we don't try to suppress, nor do we criticize our experience, but let it be as it is in the light of our intuitive awareness with the heart of kindness that's rooted in mindfulness. It's also important that we not proceed with attachment to an ideal of mudita, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. Not with an attachment of how we think it should be, but we proceed with honesty, with humility, and with a willingness grounded in unconditional friendship, grounded in metta, for ourselves. Even as we accept the arising of various reactive states, reactive patterns when they show up, the purification of the heart occurs not by forcing, but through the attitude of acceptance and mindful awareness. And at some point, there's a shift in the relationship to the experience of inadequacy, or the very painful experience of being better than. Eventually, our self-identification, what we regard as me, mine, I, is seen through and breaks up. The beliefs that we've so tightly held onto about ourselves are experienced and known as ephemeral, like the colors of the rainbow that we saw this afternoon. Just insubstantial habit patterns. They're not solid truths. The anguish, the pain of the comparing mind is no longer then being attached to, no longer being believed in and identified with. There's a release from the conditioning that I know some of you have experienced. Everything opens up. Life opens up. There's a sense of freedom in those moments. We're really present in our life, and there's a great joy in this. Free in our own being, the freedom to take joy, and to celebrate, to rejoice in the happiness and the success of others, is much more readily available. The natural responding purity of sympathetic, empathetic, contagious joy blossoms and flourishes then as the real thing. Just as metta and aversion can't coexist, as we talked about a few days ago, jealousy, envy, and joy cannot coexist. In other words, they can't happen at the same time. Now, I was practicing a 3-month retreat, and I was about 5 weeks into this retreat, and I began to experience quite a painful loneliness, sense of loneliness. And my first reaction to this experience was a strong desire for attention, a strong desire for recognition, acknowledgement. I wanted something from outside myself to take away this loneliness. At least I wanted a note on the bulletin board for me. I looked at the bulletin board and it looked like everybody in the retreat except me had a note. So during this very painful period, at one point I decided to go outside and do some walking meditation one afternoon. And on my way outside, I passed the door of a very dear friend of mine who was also sitting this retreat. And sitting outside her door was closed, just sitting outside her door was a container with a beautiful bunch of fresh flowers sitting by her door. Flowers, of course, there left by someone, signifying a caring, friendly attention. She was a good friend of mine, but all of a sudden I was extremely jealous, ragefully jealous, actually, envy. And there was even this little taste of kind of a hatred coming up inside me, kind of erupted like a volcano. And I felt awful. I really felt terrible, worse than I'd felt just being lonely. And so I went on outside, reaching the outdoor side, and I decided to do some walking meditation out on the grass. And I decided to face my painful feelings, which in those moments led me to do some metta and mudita practice while I was walking. So I started to silently repeat phrases. May you be happy and peaceful. May your joy and delight be full and increase. May it never end. And I was directing my phrases up to the second floor window where my friend's room was. And I knew she was in her room still. So, but I felt myself doing kind of stomping meditation. I don't know if it's like not walking, but like that. And my words coming out, the phrases were coming out in that same way, very hard, sharp, along with my steps. And inside, there was this feeling of burning, rather than what I thought should be happening, was this feeling of love and joy and friendship to my friend. And then all of a sudden, there was this intuitive knowing that in the immediacy of that moment, I was the one that was suffering. So the direction of the phrases turned around towards me. They came myself to me. May I be safe and protected from inner and outer danger and harm. May I be peaceful and happy. May I take care of myself wisely, easily. May I be liberated. And I continued with the walking meditation for 40, 45 minutes, directing the phrases to myself over and over and over again. And after a while, my inner experience started to ease and soften and open. And so then I decided to go back upstairs and sit in my room. And just as I opened the door from the outside coming inside, and my friend's door was right next to the outside door, just as I opened the outside door to come in, my friend opened her door and saw the flowers sitting by her door. And she didn't see me. So I just stood there and watched. And she opened her door and saw the flowers, and this beautiful smile just came upon her face. She was, of course, so delighted. And I stood and I found myself crying, but smiling at the same time, kind of smiling tears coming out of my eyes and smiling on my face. accompanied by feelings of love, by feelings of friendship, and by joy in her delight in the flowers that some kind-hearted person had left for her by her door. All of the divine abidings, we work with the seeds that were planted long ago, and we sow new seeds. We cultivate them through our practice. And a piece of the process along the way is that we get the opportunity to see what is not mudita, which I very much had got to see that day. And then I got to see also mudita, experience mudita. And when we see what's not mudita, that doesn't stop us from continuing on, even though sometimes it's not so easy. Some of the energies, the difficult weeds, we could say, the weeds that show up in our garden that aren't mudita, are very deeply rooted. And so we keep going with our practice. So we have the opportunity to see what are called the far enemies of mudita, the opposites of mudita: jealousy, mind, judgment, boredom. Practice offers us the opportunities to see these states clearly. And it's in seeing that the opportunity for transformation occurs. As we continue on with our practice, we continue planting the seeds of mindfulness, of loving kindness, of compassion, of mudita, of equanimity. Seeing and letting go in the process. Letting go of grasping onto our old conditioned habit patterns of suffering. We see and begin to understand the mind of boredom in relationship to mudita. It's said that mudita eliminates boredom. Boredom is rooted in aversion, in not liking, in not being happy with things as they are, and thus not paying attention to things, separating ourselves from our experience, and with the mind of aversion, wanting something else. Be open to our experiences just as they are. The little things in life, in our practice, the little things in our practice. As we take an interest, we begin to experience happiness in this open-hearted receptivity itself. And we experience delight in many of the small things that make up a day or make up an hour or maybe make up just a few moments. And so, at that point, we're no longer bored. We're connected to this moment, just as it is. Our practice is alive again. And we just simply then carry on cultivating, fertilizing, and watering our garden. And the seeds take deeper root. They grow, they blossom, and they fruit slowly, slowly, just as any garden grows. Understanding, wisdom, comes through our own particular karmic predicaments in very direct experiential ways, as I'm sure most of you are aware of at this point in the retreat. And this is a very natural part of the process of awakening, of practice and of awakening for everyone, everyone. As the personal particulars of our own karmic predicaments begin to unwind, and fall away, the mind, the heart begins to open. And the universal truths of suffering and the universal truths of happiness are touched with more and more depth, more spaciousness, as the process of purification unfolds. Remembering this is really important in that it helps us to not rigidly lock into our opinions, not grasp onto our learned, conditioned views with so tightly. As our conditioning unwinds, unbinds, it kind of feels almost sometimes like it literally unwinds and is purified, our view widens, our view deepens, and the amazing boundless scope and depth of the Buddha's understanding and the teachings just keep unfolding and becoming clearer and clearer and brighter and more easily accessible. Mudita energizes us and makes the heart, the mind light, pliable, open, generous, relaxed. And as these qualities grow and mature along the way of our practice, we find that these qualities of being are very helpful, and actually they're absolutely necessary as our practice unfolds. It's necessary for the whole of our practice. It depends on our capacity to connect directly and to open-heartedly feel and take delight in things. We must allow ourselves, or begin to allow ourselves, to feel joy. Letting go of the contraction of guilt about feeling happy, and recognizing and letting go of the feelings that we might have of fear and grasping, and the thoughts that if I feel happy, if I feel at ease, I know it will be taken away from me somehow. Identification, attachment with the conditioned habit of fear and grasping itself is what defeats happiness. That's what defeats happiness. So gladdening our mind, gladdening our heart, bringing gladness in, joy, delight, helps to free us. And then in turn, the moments of freedom bring more joy, gladden our heart, gladden our mind. And so it's this seamless circle of inner transmission and transformation. Appreciation and gratitude for the blessings in our own life, and appreciative joy for and with others, with others' blessings, the blessings in other people's lives. This is part of our practice. When I first decided to offer a talk on mudita, I looked for as pure an example of mudita in my own life as I could find. And so I wanted to share the following two examples that came up. Conditions would have it, my one-year-old grandson and I were alone together the morning that he first walked all by himself across the room. And of course, he'd been working up to it for many weeks, practicing. But when it actually happened, he was amazingly delighted in the midst of the experience, kind of like Adi Rinpoche, who laughed while he was painting. My grandson laughed all the way across the room the first time he walked across the room. And I, of course, in turn, experienced tremendous feelings of great delight and happiness in the accomplishment of his accomplishment, and in his great joy in his accomplishment. As it was all just kind of happening right in front of me. So that was the first pure joy experience that I came up with. And then I also remembered that when I lived on a farm, because those of us that lived there felt so much mudita, we used to go down to the barn when the calves were being born, and when baby goats, when the kids were being born, because we experienced so much mudita when we watched this process, the birth of the calves and the baby goats, the kids. Because very soon after their birth, they would try and then try and try again, undaunted in their struggle. I mean, they just were determined to get up on their four legs. And then when they finally succeeded, I called it finding their legs, when they would finally find their legs, they would just jump and hop and skip all over the barn. And we had so much mudita. It was such a joyful experience that we tried to get down to the barn every time we knew somebody was giving birth down there. First walking, and the calf or the kid, baby goat, finding their legs. Ours and joys in our practice. We could call this joy as grace. Just the natural unfolding of things. It's just the way of things. My grandson certainly wasn't walking for me. And in fact, he wasn't even walking for him. It's just the way of things. Walking happens. So joy as grace. Joy as just this. Joy just as it is. Exploring and recognizing the joy that has no self at the center of it. The momentary joy of the pure heart. Recognizing and acknowledging these moments in our own experience, in our own life. I'd also like to say that with teaching the Dhamma and in having opportunity to be with you and to share the Buddha's offerings, to share the Buddha's teachings with you, and to share in your joys, your successes in your practice, in the process of your practice, there's much mudita that comes up. It's quite really wonderful. As practice unfolds, we find that mudita and compassion, mudita and karuna, are very closely allied, very closely related. They're complementary aspects of our being. When we're lost in the seeming endless depths of sorrow, or maybe despair, mudita is a remedy that can remind us, oh yes, there's joy. There's joy too. And decay, we could say, into a kind of ignorance or delusion. Some of you might recall the story of Icarus, whose father made him a pair of wings made out of wax. And his joy was so great that he decided to fly up to the sun. And the wings melted because they were wax. And he fell down into the ocean and drowned. So it's just a story, you know, but a good teaching story. An ignorant joy, a deluded joy. We can get lost sometimes in a kind of spinning out in what in English we call giddy joy. I don't know how that might translate. Say it louder. Okay, okay, thank you. that kind of joy. It's a kind of blind attachment to something good, something that we enjoy. A blind attachment to things. Maybe some success, maybe something we've gotten. So we're not really present with things with that kind of joy. We're not here, we're not present. A friend of mine told me a story about something that had happened in her life that she was very, very happy about. And she was going to have lunch with a friend. And she sat down with her friend and started telling her friend at this lunch about this great thing that had happened in her life and how delighted and happy and tremendously joyful she was about it, talking and telling her friend. And then all of a sudden she realized that her friend was sitting there trying very hard to listen, but that her friend was very unhappy. But for the first 10 minutes she hadn't even noticed, because she was so blindly caught in herself. It wasn't a joy without the self as the center. The self was at the center. So then she changed her way, and she connected to her friend. We're caught in delusion or the denial of a kind of blind excitement. Compassion can bring us back to the reality of suffering, which is part of the whole of this life. Compassion can help bring us back into balance. And mudita, in turn, balances compassion from keeping it from falling into a great depth of darkness, kind of brooding over the huge depth, ongoingness, seemingly endless suffering in the world. So the union of mudita and karuna, the union of joy and compassion, allows us to see and to deeply experience the whole of this life. In the 1980s, when I was living in Nepal for a while, my youngest son, who at that time was 18, came over to visit me for a month. And the two of us were going to go trekking up to the Annapurna base camp. And so we went to Pokhara, which is the entryway into that range. And we were having lunch one day in Pokhara, which is a beach town. Some of you have probably been there. It's the gateway to the Annapurna range. And there's a big lake there, so it's kind of a beach town. So we were sitting at this little restaurant outside, and because it's a lot of tourists go there, they play music. There was loud music playing at this restaurant, and it was Madonna. And Madonna was singing "It's a Material World." And so we were sitting waiting for our lunch, and Madonna's blaring out loud, "It's a Material World." And in front of us on the dirt, little dirt street, sand street, Nepal was walking by. And along comes a man on a cart, and he has no legs. He's a leper, and he's pushing himself along on the cart on this dirt street, dirt little path, and he actually doesn't even have very many fingers left. And he's pushing himself along, and then from the other direction comes a young cow, a calf. And the two of them meet right in front of my son and I, in front of our table. And they stop right in front of us. And the calf starts licking the man. And the man is delighted. He takes off his cap, and he takes off his shirt, All of which was very dirty, including his body was very dirty. And the calf is licking him, and he licks him all over his head. The man turns his body as best he can, and the calf licks his whole chest, his whole back, his arms. He gives himself to the calf, and the calf gives him a bath, basically. The calf, and they're going on. We're watching, my son and I are watching this, and then the calf finishes licking him all over. And the man throws his arms around the calf and holds the calf. And the calf very politely, calves aren't polite, but I mean, just stood there until the man finished his hug. And then they both kept going in the directions that they were out, were going in. Now, just to say, as some of you know, I'm sure, in that part of the world, cows are holy. That was a holy cow. It wasn't just a cow or just a calf. It was a holy cow. And the man was very dirty, as I mentioned. He looked like he hadn't bathed in a long time. So he was, and it's hot there, so he was very salty. So the holy cow and the salty man met. And the man got a holy bath, and the cow got the salt that he needed on a very practical level. And they were both very happy. And my son and I, after they continued on their way, we turned and looked at each other, and tears were streaming down both our faces. Tears of joy and tears of compassion. This man had a very, very hard life. Dukkha and compassion. A selflessness that's inherent in our natural human capacities of metta, karuna, mudita, as they all dance together, as they grow and they mature through our practice. They add to, support, and balance each other, helping to keep the clarity and the spaciousness of seeing and experiencing things as they really truly are. Way of this Dhamma journey, we have infinite opportunities to know the joys of practice and to take delight in these joys of practice in relationship to our own practice and feel mudita for others in their practice. So, for instance, the joy of a collected, focused mind. The joy of calm, tranquility, the joy of non-dispersion, the joy of a loving, compassionate heart, the joy of metta, the joy of connection, the joy of non-separation, the joy of living with a deepening ethical relationship to life. The joy of living harmlessly, the joy of non-guilt, the joy of non-worry, non-deceit, the joy of interconnectedness, the joy of interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh calls it, and the joy of seeing things clearly, truly, just as they are. Which brings the great joy of understanding, the joy of wisdom, the joy of non-delusion, of non-confusion, the joy of peace. Experiencing the heart of pure joy, joy for, joy with another's happiness, another's success, and most profoundly, the experience in any moment of the great joy of transformation. This is our possibility. Joy is the ground of our healing, one of the fruits of our practice. many of the paintings of the Buddha and statues of the Buddha can be a pointer to us. Can't see that one very well. It can be a pointer or a reminder to us, because many of them, they have a small smile. The statues and the paintings, the Buddha has this small smile. And it can be a reminder and an inspiration and a pointer to us of the underlying ground of joy. The inherent joy in the midst of and along with the deepest compassion and wisdom of the awakened mind, of the awakened heart. We'll close the talk with some words from the Buddha. And this is from the Dhammapada, and it's called Joy or Happiness. Holy, free from hostility, even among those who hate. Live joyfully, free from misery and affliction, even among those who are afflicted. Live happily, free from the trouble of busyness, even among those who are busy. Live joyfully, like those who have nothing, feeding on rapture, like the shining ones. Winning gives birth to hostility. Losing, one lies down in pain. The calmed lie down in peace, having put winning and losing aside. There's no fire like lust, no evil like hatred, no pain like disharmony, and no happiness like the happiness of peace. Greed, the primary sickness. Delusion, the primary pain. Knowing this truth just as it is, freedom, the primary joy. Health, great good fortune. Contentment, great wealth. Trust, great kinship. Freedom, the greatest happiness. Look within. Taste the nourishment of seclusion, of stillness and calm. Freed from fear and attachment, refreshed with the sweet joy of the way. How joyful to see the awakened. Always happiness in the company of the wise. Endless grief for those who commune with a fool, as traveling in company with an enemy. Joyful is communion with the awakened, as with a gathering of kin. Follow the awakened, the shining ones, the discerning, the learned, dutiful, loving, integral, and wise. They know how to work and forbear. Follow them as the moon follows the path of the stars. And let's sit for just a moment.